We were calling off the wedding.
Why?
Last week, the guys took me out for a bachelor party, and we hit every strip club in town.
Including the foreplay.
We walked in, and there was Vicky grinding on some guy. Some of the guys thought it was hot. I just went outside and puked. I called her later and told her we were finished.
Why did you lie to us?
Well, I didn't want her face all over the tabloids. Lawyer by day, stripper by night.
I wouldn't want my fiancé stripping for money. I'd kill him.
City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
Hey guys, welcome to Munch My Benson. My name is Adam. I'm here in New York. I had a lovely series of adventures over the last few days. I'm joined on the line by Josh. How are things where you are, Josh?
We had the business call today.
Oh yeah, we did.
Yeah, I guess people can expect some minor changes.
You know, the music is going away, as it we knew it was going to for a while.
Was eventually going to. Yeah,
we knew this was going to happen, so it's not that big of a surprise to us. I'm gonna miss it because it was always fun to make little in jokes with it, but
yeah,
it is what it is. We are not legally allowed to use any of that music.
No.
So I'm not at all surprised that it's what has to go.
Yeah. And I mean, we ultimately, you know, we got dinged on, what, 7 episodes, and one of them I got dinged on again, even though I removed the audio, because like there are a couple of podcast platforms that are not updating.
That's really annoying.
I don't even like the song. I'm not going to say what one. Yeah. I just chose it because it fit the moment in the podcast.
Yeah, sure.
And so, whatever. I'm a little irritated about that. But any of the other changes shouldn't really affect people too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, expect to maybe see or hear ads at a certain point.
Yeah, and the thing with that is that Josh and I put a shitload of work into this. And, I hate to say it, but it would be nice to get at least
some money.
At least get some compensation for that amount of time. Mm-hmm. Not that this isn't really fun and I don't enjoy doing it.
Not that we don't appreciate the patrons that we do have.
Exactly. But, and we might change the structure.
We're still
with that
very
too.
Much in the red on this.
Yeah. We might change the structure of that too. We've talked about different things. So, it's a good thing for us because it means that we are going to keep doing this for the foreseeable future, which is great. Now, one of the reasons I like doing this show is because every now and then we get to talk about an episode like the one we're going to talk about today, which is a ton of fun, and I love it. But before we get there, I don't know, just little things like Max and I went to the Big Zoo in the Bronx yesterday, which is just a wild adventure, top to bottom a wild adventure. For one thing, we're probably like one of 5 people that went to that zoo that took public transit to get there. And that's an interesting ride. We rode on an elevated train that went right past the former Wasteland District from Wolfen, which was, of course, I was like staring out the window at, houses that were built in the whatever, late 1980s, early 90s, going, ooh, is that where the church was? Ooh, you know. the Bronx is a trip compared to Manhattan in many ways. But then the zoo itself is just out of control big. First time I've really had to interact with suburbanites in a long time. So that's a little different, but pretty fun. Max and I had a blast. Saw all kinds of shit. You know, peacocks tried to steal his French fries and... You know, we saw.
Wait, was this mystery peacocking, or were these actual?
There's like
peacocks?
Hundreds of peacocks that roam free there.
Okay.
Yeah, saw peacock chicks.
Yeah,
boy peacocks, girl peacocks, all kinds of peacocks.
Peahens.
Yeah, they weren't. They were
female peacocks or peahens.
Oh yeah, they weren't peacocking, so to speak.
Yeah, sure.
But they were peacocks.
Not like mystery.
No, not like mystery. But yeah, I also finished the rehearsal finally, and what a wild ride, man.
Yeah,
just outstanding.
God. When he starts, I mean, the final rehearsal.
The facial recognition software on the mirror.
On the mirror? Yeah, yeah.
It really, really brings it.
When he's rehearsing as her, trying to do a redo.
Unbelievable
shit. As the mom. Yeah, Jesus H. Christ.
Can't recommend this show enough.
Yeah, and it's all getting to like this profound loneliness that he always, his character always has.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, such a great show.
Can't recommend it enough, really. It's fucking fantastic.
Seriously, watch it. It's fucking incredible. I finished season 5 of Better Call Saul, so I'm just waiting for 6 to drop on Netflix.
Remind me...
Because we're recording this on August 31st. I'm guessing it drops tomorrow on Netflix.
Remind me in spoiler-free fashion, if you can, sort of what happens in season 5, because I can't remember if I saw season 5 or not.
Season 5 has Lalo Salamanca.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I saw season 5 then. Yeah. Season 5 is good. Hopefully season 6 drops on
Netflix. And season 6 was, you know, the dumb AMC, like, oh, we're going to split the last season in half and fucking, you know, air them like 6 months apart. Yeah, so it takes even longer.
Well, and then Bob Odenkirk almost died in the middle of that.
Sure.
And,
you know, that did happen.
Yeah. But he thankfully did not. So I'm looking forward to that. But Josh, I just looked back through my recap for this episode. And it's really long, so I think we're going to have a fair amount to talk about.
Yeah, I have like 3 full pages of guest star notes.
Sure, there's one person who's exceedingly famous, and another couple.
And two more who are very well known to us, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we should I think we should do this. So we are talking about season 7, episode 15. It's called Manipulated. Before that, Josh, what are you drinking? It looks like Campari and soda. Is that what you got going on
Campari
there?
Gin and soda.
Ooh, nice. Floral.
And for listeners at home, I'm drinking this out of a very large, hefty glass.
Mm-hmm. So it could be a Stein if it had a handle. It's a Stein-like.
Yeah, definitely. So it's you know, obviously filled to the brim with ice, and then a half gin, quarter Campari, and quarter soda water.
But you should probably have a orange peel in that, Josh, if I were garnishing that. If you're a fancy man drinking fancy Campari drinks, you need an orange rind in there, Josh.
But you know what the rind is taking? It's taking up room for liquor.
I'm back on the Narragansett train. I'm crushing it over here.
Right on.
I'll probably have another one of these shortly because...
I had a hams with dinner.
Nice. But yeah... A woman screams. Her hands are tied to a headboard and a leather-gloved hand closes over her mouth. Just then, two of New York's finest break down the door only to find that this is a student film shoot for Rosemary's Bridesmaid. The problem is that someone in the building did call 911, and it was neither these dorks nor the old man next door. They try another door and find a woman dead in her bed with a nasty wound to her forehead. Benson and Stabler join a legion of investigators at the apartment. A stack of wedding invitations identifies the dead woman as Vicky Riggs and her fiancé as Alan Winchell. They also find a stack of creepy notes from a potential stalker, bruises consistent with choking on her neck, an engagement ring tan line on her ring finger, and semen inside of her. It seems like the killer probably called 911 after raping and choking her to death, but he wiped the phone so there are no fingerprints. Morales has been studying audio production from the Munch My Benson Sound Academy and thinks he'll be able to match the voice from the 911 call to a suspect. So the first person they haul in is obviously fiancé Alan. He tells them that even though Vicky worked for a big corporate law firm, she mostly took their pro bono cases defending, in Alan's words, the scum of the earth. Alan's voice is no match, so Munch goes to track down the film students and Stebenson head to the fancy law firm. There, they find Vicky's boss, Tessa McKellen, who's wheelchair-bound and extremely famous-looking. She tells them that Vicky loved working the hard luck cases, including one case where the dancers at a mobbed-up strip club were attempting to unionize. Tessa thinks that the Rimaldi crime family might be responsible. Next stop is the four-play strip club where Wally Rimaldi explains that Vicky worked out a deal with the club. Instead of the club's usual 70% cut, she got them to agree to taking more money while also providing health insurance for the dancers. Oh, he also gave Vicky a job as a dancer. Another dancer, Josie, tells him that Vicky loved the thrill of the dance and also that a guy named Tim the Wiener Man was a little weird towards her and even followed her home a couple times. Stabutuola find the Wiener Man slinging meat in Herald Square. He tells him that Vicky is his girlfriend and he's going to marry her. He even produces an engagement ring, which just so happens to be Vicky's ring from her engagement with Alan. This obviously gets him hauled in for questioning. Though he might be delusional, Wiener Man didn't kill Vicky or steal her ring. He found it in the trash behind the club after Alan dumped her. Back to Alan, who explains that the wedding had been called off after he and his boys hit up every strip joint in town for his bachelor party, including the foreplay where he saw his future bride giving out lap dances like they were going out of style. He tells him he lied during his initial talk with the police to ward off the tabloids, not because he killed her. Of course, his alibi checks out, so he's off the radar. Munch has some good news from his chat with the student filmmakers. In exchange for a video blurb from Cragen, they give SVU all of their unedited footage, which includes exterior shots from an hour before the murder, which show Vicky getting hot and heavy with an unknown man who has his own key to her apartment. Morales uses facial recognition software to match the photo against DMV records. He gets a match with a Linus McKellen, Tessa's husband. Benabler head to the McKellen's massive house in Mount Pleasant, New York. There they learn that Tessa was wounded in a car accident 3 years ago, and ever since, Linus has acted as her primary caregiver, giving her shots, keeping track of her medicines, and generally doing everything for her. He agrees to head into town for an interview rather than be forced to admit to his wife that he was banging her protege. His voice is obviously a match to the 911 call. He tells them that he and Vicky had been having an affair. Tessa couldn't put out post-accident, so he was just blowing off steam with her employee. Vicky had tried to get him to leave his wife, but he stayed in the marriage out of guilt since he drove the car into a black ice which wrecked the car and paralyzed his wife. He tells him that after whamming and bamming and thank you mamming his way out of Vicky's apartment, he realized he'd left his watch, so he went back inside where he found the body and made the 911 call. Of course, how did someone kill Vicky in the 5 minutes that Linus was outside? Especially since no one entered the building during the time in question. Novak thinks she has Linus dead to rights, but her strategy goes out the window from the get-go. Linus's attorney gets the facial recognition software which found Linus thrown out, which also gets Linus's arrest thrown out. Vicky's phone records loop back to Linus, who is also calling Josie, the other dancer from the foreplay. Benson and Stabler find Josie's door chained and her dead in the living room with Linus's spunk inside. How did someone kill her and get out with the door still chained? A fresh boot print on the ledge outside gives them an answer. Spider-Man did it. They find the same boot print on the roof of Vicky's building and evidence that he rappelled off the roof down to Vicky's window. Linus claims he doesn't know why anyone would want to frame him for Vicky's murder, and also that he never slept with Josie. He just used her apartment to hook up with Vicky from time to time. Benson buys his story, so maybe someone is trying to hurt Tessa through Linus. They find Tessa in the hospital with pneumonia. She tells them that she's not a criminal attorney, so she doesn't deal with lowlifes, and that she's not giving them a client list since that would violate her ethics. Munch digs up all her old cases, which aren't very many since she inherited her partnership from her father and only handles 3 cases a year post-accident. Still, one of them is noteworthy. She sued the Department of Defense on behalf of a private military corporation called Silverhammer and lost, which cost the firm possibly $100 million. Elliot strong-arms the firm's CEO into providing SVU with a list of contractors he had let go after losing the lawsuit. One of the names, Walter Inman, had a criminal record and happens to be a mountain climber and infiltration specialist. Inman runs when Benabler knock on his door. He rappels out the window, where he's met by Tutu Unch. Munch moves in front of Finn's weapon to put Inman in cuffs, which gives him a fraction of a second he needs to slug Munch in the gut and take off running, where he's met by Elliot's raised pistol. With 2 guns drawn on him, he's cuffed and arrested. Inman's boots match the prints found at the scene, but he's a pro and doesn't tell them anything. While he does have a potential motive against Tessa, the one unexplained detail of the case is how and by whom did Linus McKellen's jism get inside Josie Post. Warner comes through, so to speak, with a possible explanation. The Josie sample contains saliva that matched neither Linus nor Josie. In fact, it matched Tessa, which means that Tessa blew Linus, saved the spunk, and gave it to Inman for implantation. Now that's a goddamn Law & Order SVU scheme, baby. Tessa claims incredulity at the accusation, and we are treated to a rather lengthy back and forth about how Tessa's saliva got mixed with Linus's spunk inside Joni's vag. Fantastic stuff. She tells him that she needs and depends on Linus for everything, so why would she try to ruin him? The squad needs to flip Inman, but how do you get an Uncle Sam-trained super assassin to talk? Well, he screwed up by paying for his daughter's Ivy League education in cash. Novak gets all his accounts frozen, which has the desired effect. He tells him that Tessa hired Inman when she suspected her husband of cheating on her. He tailed Linus to Vicky and Josie's apartments and also stole streptococcus and meningitis from a lab, which Tessa used weirdly on herself. Stabler and Benson head up to arrest Tessa, where they find her about to inject herself with something. Wong thinks Tessa has Munchausen syndrome. She's addicted to the sympathy she gets from being sick all the time. He thinks Tessa is trying to put her husband in prison, where he'll never be able to cheat on her again. Tessa's lawyer predictably argues for an insanity plea, which leads to a Wong interview with Tessa. Later at the competency hearing, Tessa gets tired of her own attorney and Wong talking about her Munchausens and intentionally ODs on insulin, causing a massive seizure. Judge Petrosky agrees that the display at the competency hearing is proof that Tessa isn't fit to stand trial. Novak thinks that Tessa is playing the court, but they need to prove that Tessa is so manipulative that she planned the defense meticulously. Benson and Stabler talk to Linus at his house. He tells them that even though he takes care of all his wife's medical needs, she never lets him go to her doctor's visits. He finally gets that she has been playing him like a fiddle ever since the accident and goes straight to his wheelchair-bound wife and throws her ass in the swimming pool. She immediately starts kicking her legs and is able to walk out of the pool. Everything in her life has been a lie for years. Linus leaves, Tessa wonders who will take care of her, and we are left with a, do they let you make love on a real train in prison, Dick Wolf?
This was an episode of television.
Yeah, man, it really had everything. Big stars, wild schemes, yeah. Really
wild
schemes.
Wow.
I've never thought so much about jizz implantation. Well, I haven't thought about it at least since the episode about the anal probe electro ejaculation machine.
Well, that's extraction. Though, this is putting it in places. Like, are you using a turkey baster? What are you doing here?
Apparently that method is effective.
Anyway, this was an episode of television that had a lot of guest stars in it.
It did, yeah.
First off, we talked about Joel De La Fuente, who's playing Terror Tech Morales in Munch My Bets in episode 83, We're Burning Through Pedos. We were discussing season 4, episode 15, Pandora. Mm-hmm. We talked about Mike Doyle in, or who's playing CSU Tech, Ryan O'Halloran.
All the big guns are in this one, man.
Yeah. We talked about him in Munch My Bets in episode 36. He let Ed teabag him, right? Where he was playing not Ryan O'Halloran. we talked about Ned Eisenberg, R.I.P., who's playing attorney Roger Kressler in Munch My Bets in episode 46. It sucked that D-bag rape boy was going to be the last guy to lay pipe in McCallum County. That one was about season 11, episode 16, Witness. And we've already talked about Betty Buckley, who was attorney Walsh, DeMornay's defense attorney. Yeah. We talked about her back in Munch My Bets in episode 61. Seems like a weird side hustle for washed up catchers with bad knees. That one was about season 8, episode 2, Clock. Now, obviously, we're starting with Rebecca fucking DeMornay.
It's DeMornay. Rebecca DeMornay.
You see her and you're like, oh, she fucking did it the instant you see her.
Oh, yeah. Wait, she's in a wheelchair? Nah, yeah. Not buying that for a second. So Rebecca DeMornay is playing Tessa McKellen. She was born in Santa Rosa, California. Her father was a DJ and later television host. Her parents divorced about a year after her disputed birth date, and her mother remarried a year later, at which point she took her stepfather's surname. A year after that, her stepfather died of a stroke, and she, her mother, and her stepbrother left Pasadena, relocating to Europe, where she attended the Summerhill School in Leiston, England. I'm maybe pronouncing that correctly.
Who knows?
Leiston, I don't know, whatever.
It's a failed state. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, obviously. Before completing her studies at a private high school in Germany. At 16, she had an agent who was selling her songs to German rock musicians, and she'd written the theme song for the kung fu flick Goodbye Bruce Lee, His Last Game of Death.
Wow.
Around the age of 20, she moved back to the U.S. and began studying at the Lee Strasberg Institute. She made her film debut in the Francis Ford Coppola Tom Waits team-up musical One from the Heart, which starred her then-partner, Harry Dean Stanton.
What?
Yeah. Like, when I start, I was like, what in the fuck life did she live?
Yeah.
This is fucking insane. Harry Dean Stanton.
Wow. Wow.
Markedly older.
Yeah.
But Harry Dean Stanton was born 65 years old.
I know, that's the thing. Like, they could be exactly the same age, and he's looked older, that like looked 20 years older than her. Yeah. Every single year of his life.
He did just die at, like, I don't know, in his well into his 80s.
Yeah, he was well into his 80s. She was born in 1959, so yeah.
Yeah, well, that's disputed. she's lied about her age twice. Nice. At least. Anyway, 2 years later, she broke the fuck out in Risky Business. Yeah. During the filming of Risky Business, she left Harry Dean Stanton for Tom Cruise.
Yeah, a much shorter man, I imagine.
Much shorter.
Now, I'm going to look up Harry Dean Stanton's height while you're doing this.
I bet Harry Dean Stanton's 6 foot even.
5'8", not tall.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, like 8 inches taller than Tom Cruise, but whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
She's been in the films Testament, The Slugger's Wife, Runaway Train, The Trip to Bountiful, and God Created Woman, Backdraft, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Yeah.
Never look at breastfeeding the same way. Guilty as Sin, The Three Musketeers, Never Talk to Strangers, Identity, Lords of Dogtown, Wedding Crashers, American Venus, and American Reunion. On TV, she was top billed in the 90s miniseries of The Shining.
Weird.
And has appeared in recurring roles in ER, Boomtown, The Practice, John from Cincinnati, Lucifer, and Jessica Jones. Now, going back to her personal life, after breaking up with Tom Cruise in 1985, she was married to novelist Bruce Wagner for a few years. Then she dated and was engaged to Leonard Cohen, co-producing his 1992 album, The Future, which is dedicated to her.
Wow.
She was later with sportscaster Patrick O'Neill and has two daughters with him.
Interesting. I wonder if he's a short man, too. She's into short kings.
Excuse me. I'm Rebecca De Mornay from the homeless shelter.
Oh, hi.
Are you the ones leaving those muffin pieces behind our shelter?
You've been enjoying them?
They're just stumps.
Well, they're perfectly edible.
Oh, so you just assume that the homeless will eat them? They'll eat anything?
No, we just thought it.
I know it's a thought. They don't have homes. They don't have jobs. What do they need the top of a muffin for? They're lucky to get the stumps.
If the homeless don't like them, the homeless don't have to eat them.
The homeless don't like them.
Fine.
We've never gotten so many complaints. Every 2 minutes, where's the top of this muffin? Who ate the rest of this?
We were just trying to help.
Why don't you just drop off some chicken skins and lobster shells?
I think they're fine.
Moving on, Chris Potter, who's playing Linus McKellen.
Yeah.
He was born in Toronto to an ex-pro football player turned insurance executive and a family law lawyer. He was raised in London, Ontario. He attended Oak Ridge Secondary School and wanted to pursue being a professional athlete, but his dad, a former professional athlete, would not allow it. Probably because of, you know, he saw all of the basically punch-drunk football players that he used to play with, suffering through the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
He dropped out of college to be a rock musician and soon thereafter got involved in theater. After bouncing around from working on an oil rig to selling cars to selling insurance, he began his career on TV as an actor and pitchman. He was main cast or a series regular in Material World, Kung Fu, The Legend Continues, which I'm sure Adam and I know him from.
No, everything that Chris Potter was in is gold, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about Material World.
6 episodes of Top Cops, you know?
Fucking Silk Stockings?
Yeah, like main cast.
He was main cast. Main cast on Silk Stockings. He basically took over for Rob Estes, right?
Yeah. 66
it's
episodes.
Fucking so dumb that we both know that. He was in season one of Queer as Folk. He was in Wild Card. He was a series regular for like a year on The Young and the Restless. And he's been in Heartland, which none of you know, but all of your parents watch. It's a CBC show that's been on since 2007 and is still on. There are like 15 fucking seasons, but if you're a septuagenarian...
If you're a septuagenarian Canadian, so a very specific
set. Parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, because it's all on Netflix.
Oh,
my parents
nice.
Have watched all of Heartland.
Nice.
And they talked about it nonstop. And Drew and Whit and I, especially Drew and I, are just kind of like, we're never going to watch
yeah,
this.
No, I'm never having this conversation with you.
Yeah.
He's also been in like a million Lifetime Movie Network films. Like,
oh, sure. He was also the voice of Gambit in the 1990s X-Men animated series.
Nice.
And he was Achilles in The Legend of Achilles, the voice of. He's also been in the films The Shrink Is In, The Pacifier, A Warrior's Heart, and Spymate, which featured a 14-year-old Emma Roberts, Richard Kind, Pat Morita in one of his last film roles, and Louie as Minky, the titular super spy primate who has to help his former partner rescue his kidnapped prodigy daughter.
I mean, is that...
There's no way. I'm not even... It's going to be so fucking bad. I'm not doing that to anybody. Like, I can't deal with a fucking primate spy.
I can. Look, we haven't watched we haven't watched a single primate movie yet.
Well, put it on the list, but I can't imagine we're going to watch it anytime soon. Maybe when we hit a Richard Kind episode. Fucking hell. He has four children with his wife, Karen. Holt McElhaney.
Yeah.
He's playing Walter Inman, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He was born in New York City to Irish actor-producer Michael McElhaney and American singer and actress regarded as the queen of the cabaret, Julie Wilson. His brother were sent to Ireland to get a classical education, living in Dublin and attending the National School in Howth. When his parents divorced, the boys moved back to the States, attending school first in New Jersey, before being sent to live with his maternal grandparents in Omaha, where he got expelled from Creighton Preparatory School and hopped a Greyhound to L.A. at 14, to hoping to become an actor, but instead getting stuck unloading trucks in a factory.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when you start going to school abroad in Dublin and then have to come back to New Jersey and then fucking Omaha.
Yeah.
It's going to be a stark difference between, I mean, like, Omaha's not that bad, but like, cool, I'm living in Dublin.
Yeah.
To, oh, cool, I'm living in Omaha. His parents eventually tracked him down and sent him back to a boarding school in County Kildare, Ireland. He was eventually allowed to return to Creighton Prep, from whence he graduated in 1981. He continued his studies in France, studying French at the Sorbonne, art at the Paris American Academy, and theater at two fucking French mime schools. He studied Shakespeare for a summer at Oxford and performed in Twelfth Night at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival before moving to New York City to begin acting professionally. He's been in the films Creepshow 2, Shakedown, Casualties of War, Alien 3, The Search for One-Eye Jimmy, Jade, Peacemaker, Fight Club, Three Kings, Alpha Dog, Vantage Point, Stolen, The Losers, Bullet to the Head, Run All Night, Black Hat, Sully, Jack Reacher Never Go Back, Greenland, Wrath of Man, Nightmare Alley, and Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2, which is currently filming. He was the star of Lights Out, the Warren Light boxing drama that was on FX, which is really good.
Yeah.
He's co-lead in Mindhunter, which is also really fucking good.
He's fantastic in that.
Yeah, he's really fucking good in that. He's also been main cast in Freedom, Golden Boy, and 61st Street, and he's had recurring roles on CSI Miami, Heroes, and Blue Bloods.
Nice.
He's in two episodes of the original series, two Criminal Intents, and one other episode of SVU. Brian Slayton, who's playing Alan Anthony Winchell, the not really grieving fiancé. He was born in St. Louis. He's in one Criminal Intent and one Chicago PD. That's it on him. I've got some more. I liked throwing that guy in the middle and have nothing to say.
Yeah, I looked at him and I was like, meh.
But he's in a Criminal Intent in the Chicago PD, so he's like in two things in the universe, and I was like, whatever. Really fast. Okay, so then we've got Fina Vitebsky, who's now Fina Reinhart. She's playing Josie Post. She was born and raised in the former USSR, came to the U.S. at 16, and graduated from NYU. In 2007, she made the transition into real estate and became the CEO and co-founder of HotRentalsNY.com, which allowed real estate agents to advertise rentals and sales properties for the tri-state area. She's also the CEO and founder of Women in Need PR, a nonprofit for victims of domestic violence. And has an epoxy counter and floor reno team called the Surface SWAT team.
Interesting.
don't even ask me how I figured that dumb shit out. Anyway, it's one of those like things where, you know, when you say you're CEO of something, where it's like, that feels like a fake CEO. Like, this is just my side hustle and I'm the only person doing it kind of thing. But
I don't know, man. I bet she's like a primary investor.
Did you use hotrentalsny.com to find your apartment?
No, now? I did not. It sounds like a reasonably shady website.
That's
also one of
those things that's from her IMDb profile, and that those shit, like when stuff is no longer the case, it's not like it gets updated, you know? So like that's something from 2007 that I presume she was putting up there then and has since either failed or been bought out.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was in One Criminal Intent. She's also in two episodes of Person of Interest and one a piece of Louie, where she's also playing a stripper.
Yeah.
The Sopranos, where I don't know, she could be playing a stripper.
I don't remember. Yeah.
Would stand to reason that she might be, but just one episode. Royal Pains and The OA. Then we've got Matthew Marr, who's playing Tim.
Yeah.
Wiener Man. He was born in Arkabootla, Mississippi. He was runner-up to play Dwight in The Office.
Mm.
He won two Obies. He's been main cast in Our Flag Means Death, which is fucking great, and he's really fun in. He's also been recurring in Outer Range, Mozart in the Jungle, Nurse Jackie, The Unusuals, and John from Cincinnati. You've also seen him in the films Dogma, Bringing Out the Dead, Vulgar, The Third Wheel, Jersey Girl, Gone Baby Gone, The Killer Inside Me, I'm Still Here, It's Kind of a Funny Story, While We're Young, A Most Violent Year, People, Places, Things, Live by Night, Lady Bird, Captain Marvel, and Marriage Story. So we share credit, because I also worked on Marriage Story.
Nice.
But just on reshoots. So I'm not in the credits. Thanks, world. Will McLaughlin, who's playing Uniform Officer Number 2. He was born in Syracuse, trained at UCB. He's had recurring roles or been in multiple episodes of Reno 911, UCB Comedy Originals, Parks and Rec, Comedy Bang Bang, Adam Ruins Everything, College Humor Originals, American Vandal, Wrecked, Loafy, and he's in like 40 episodes of the Superstore. He's one of Superstore. He's one of the employees who always asks the awful white guy questions. He's also in the films Irresistible and Hickey. And last one, we have never talked about Judge Lena Petrovsky.
Oh, really?
He's played by Joanna Merlin. Hmm. I went back and I was like, oh my God, we have not done that.
Yeah. I
searched long and hard.
I'm not surprised.
So she was born in Chicago, went to UCLA. She's known as the last working and teaching student of Michael Chekhov, who was Oscar nominated for his role in a Hitchcock movie. But he's also Anton Chekhov's nephew.
Okay.
His father is Alexander Chekhov. Anton's older brother. She made her film debut in The Ten Commandments.
Wow.
That's how old she is.
Yeah, wow.
And she's still working. Like, it's crazy. The Ten fucking Commandments. That's 1956.
Yeah, wow.
She made her Broadway debut in Beckett, which obviously later became, you know, a fucking Oscar-winning film, if I remember correctly.
I believe
Certainly Oscar-nominated, if not winning. Yeah. She was casting director for the plays Company, Follies, Evita, and Sweeney Todd. And for the films, Big Trouble in Little China,
wow.
Year of the Dragon, Last Emperor, which it's weird. I don't know how she is suddenly... There's a certain point at which she's just like, she's the casting director for every Asian-centric movie in the 80s in Hollywood. It's very strange. And then she was also the casting director for Mr. and Mrs. Bridge, The Lover. Again, same deal. Asian thing. And Jefferson in Paris. And she was the Tibetan casting director. Something. What, maybe it was Kundun or a very like
bizarre.
It's very strange because Joanna Merlin.
She doesn't speak.
Not Asian.
Yeah, no.
She teaches in the graduate acting program at Tisch and wrote the book Auditioning, an Actor-Friendly Guide. She's been in the films Hester Street, All That Jazz, Fame, Love Child, The Killing Fields, Mystic Pizza, City of Angels, and The Invasion. She was in that previously mentioned back in the Trini Alvarado episode.
Mm.
ABC After School Special Starstruck, where she played Trini Alvarado's mother.
Oh,
she's also Joel Fleischman's mother in Northern Exposure.
Oh, right on. Nice.
Yeah, in the same episode as David Margolis.
Okay.
who's playing Joel's dad.
Nice.
So the episode where they come to visit in, I think it's season 4. She's in 4 episodes of New York Undercover, 5 episodes of the original series as 2 characters, and in 43 fucking SVUs.
Yeah.
All between seasons, 2 or 3 and season 11 or 12. She was married to Martin Paul Lubner for 6 years and David Dretson from 1964 until his death in June of 06. She had 2 daughters with David Dretson, her second husband. Rachel Dretson, one of her daughters, is a documentarian who was an EP and director on Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey, which we just watched and was fucking disturbing about the FLDS. And she also was EP and director on more than a handful of front lines. And then Julie Dretson, who's your classic working actress, probably most notable for her turn as Eleanor Lawrence in 8 episodes of Handmaid's Tale. That's it.
Nice.
Finally, mercifully done with guest stars.
Josh, I'm going to get another beer.
So the officers in the cold open identify themselves as 3 William 56. Then there's an invitation that's found for Vicky Riggs. Mm. Now, Riggs is obviously Mel Gibson's character in Lethal Weapon.
Mm.
And he rides in car 3 William 56.
Wow.
His dead wife's name was Vicky.
Wow.
So that's all a weird nod to Lethal Weapon.
Wow.
Yeah. There's also the...
That's on IMDb, right? You did not track this down.
That's on IMDb, but Silverhammer, the guy that they go talk to at Silverhammer, his name is Jeffrey Sobchak. Uh-huh. That's a Big Lebowski reference.
Yeah.
Jeffrey the dude, Lebowski and Walter Sobchak.
Yeah, that's what I...
So, little movie Easter eggs.
Yeah.
And Rosemary's Bridesmaid also.
Pretty obvious, but...
Yeah. That misdirect is fun. I mean, it's very obvious if you're SVU brained.
Yeah.
You know that, that's not the group.
Exactly.
That's not what's actually happening. That's a misdirect, and we'll eventually see a freshly raped person.
Mm-hmm. Who turns out not to have been raped, but...
Yeah. so it starts as not an SVU case and continues to be not an SVU case, and then by the end is really not an SVU case.
Oh, this is 100%. This is, at no point was this ever an SVU case.
No,
I guess
not. Like, they find the body. Nope.
I mean, basically, the only thing that makes it an SVU case is that the body was of a woman. That's the only thing that remotely gives it SVU status.
Well, and she was filled with
she was filled with semen
spat out cum filled with spat out cum via turkey baster.
We have to think a lot about fucking whatever the younger Kane's jism, don't we?
It was Peter Kane. He remained friends with David Carradine until the end.
I don't
know if that means that he was
he's had similar predilections.
He narrowly avoided being murdered by ninja assassins.
You know, who staged it as a sex?
Yeah, who staged it to make it look like he was autoerotically asphyxiating himself.
Mm-hmm.
She has a ring finger tan line, which is fun.
Yeah, I mean, there's just there's all these little details which end up sending us on a million different, a million different quests around town, right?
Yeah.
The stack of the weird stalker notes that end up being from Tim the Wiener Man, the tan line, which also implicates the Wiener Man for, a solid fraction of a second, I think.
Sure.
I think he's the guy.
They really resolve that quickly.
Yeah. This is a classic SVU shot, though, of Vicky. This is just a classic SVU hire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Vicky is an extra. Whoever the actress who played Vicky, she has no credit. She has no lines.
Nope.
She is mostly naked. We don't know if she's wearing, underwear under there, but
I mean, we can safely assume that she actually is because
most likely. Most likely. Yeah. However, still, she's got the classic like legs splayed.
You can't really make an extra get naked without a pretty sizable bump, and that wouldn't happen on a network show.
I mean, maybe
so she's not naked IRL.
Maybe she just made a naked choice, you know, for the characters. Sure. But still, sure. It's just like
she's a method extra.
But there's like nothing covering her, but just like the slightest fold of a bed sheet that's covering her, sure. Her bits and pieces. Right.
As happens.
And she's dead. And at this point, we're led to believe she's been raped. This is like full SVU trifecta of an extra.
Oh, obviously. Now, the killer wiped the remote clean, which should have been the first sign to them that it wasn't Tim the Wiener Man.
Yeah.
Watching the season 7 credits, Tamara Tooney's hair is so sad to me. On her title card,
I didn't notice. Is it flat? Is it lifeless?
It's super flat.
Huh. Interesting.
She can't have been pumped to watch the credits this season, right? this is what you guys wanted me to do. Like in this episode, her hair's great.
Yeah, her hair was great in this. I even thought her hair looked great.
But then I watched the goddamn credits and I was like, what the fuck? Like we just saw her. Her hair was effervescent and, just full of fucking life. And in this, it's just like lying there, straightened out, fucking ironed down, just like drooping off of her head. It's really odd. Mm-hmm.
Oh, the crime scene is very close to friend of the show Sean's house. It's a similar neighborhood. Now, Sean's been on a wild side quest today, tracking down which art house theaters are participating in the $3 Saturday deal.
Are you going to do that with him?
Well, I wanted to go see this one at Film Forum, but he actually called Film Forum on the phone, and they told him that only the big corporate theaters are involved with the $3 thing. And he apparently got into a fight with the Film Forum.
That sounds like Sean.
People on the line.
Listeners of the podcast will probably get to know Sean soon.
I might go see Chungking Express at IFC Center.
That one stuck out to me. That stuck out. So did Sunset Boulevard. Anyway.
Great movie.
I've seen Sunset Boulevard in the theater, though.
Oh, so I see. I haven't seen it in the theater. But when she didn't win Best Actress for that, like, what's even the fucking point of the Academy Awards? You know what I mean? Like, what's the point? For sure. Anyways, moving on.
This is stupid. Yeah. Everything's dumb.
Exactly.
Now the Taru voice print match software looks not good. I also have a very hard time buying that software as being viable voice print match software.
Well, I think what they're assuming is that the viewers
that everyone's
of SVU
a fucking idiot.
Don't know what the fuck is going on with that stuff.
I mean, one look at that and you're just like, what?
You know, the waveform of a voice is a lot more complicated than what we're seeing in that. And you would assume that they have, sound engineers to work for the production.
I mean, they absolutely have a sound department.
And don't they go like, hey, guys, what is this? Tell me what this looks like. And they're just like, oh, it's some random ass scribbles on the screen. They don't just like go and like look at it.
Okay, so DeMornay shows up in a wheelchair and is like, well, there's our real killer.
Yep.
Especially if she's the Vic's boss, but it's obvious.
But it's like, come on, Kurt Russell's ex-wife from Backdraft fucking did it, dude. You know it. Yeah. You know she did.
They hand the rocks the cradle. She probably force breastfed her non-child.
She was force breastfeeding Peter Kane.
That's the only thing that she would give back or that she would get back from him.
Risky Business. That's a Chicago film, right?
Yeah. I believe
okay.
So.
It seems like Chicago. It seems like they're in Shermer, Illinois, at his house.
Well, yeah, but they're obviously not. I think it's just everything shot in Chicago in the '80s because it was cheap.
Yeah, but I mean, it has that like
it was tax credits. Like that's why. Like I mean, About Last Night shot there.
Yeah, but it has the house is very like the Shermer aesthetic. I don't know what actual.
Absolutely.
I don't know what
no,
actual.
I think it's probably whatchamacallit. Is it Lake Forest, Illinois?
Possibly.
I think it's probably something like that. A richer suburb than Shermer is supposed to be. Shermer's a little more working class. I think this is more like where Northwestern is.
That's Evanston.
Yeah, that's Evanston. Yeah. But it's either Evanston or Lake Forest or Glenn.
Yeah, like Shermer's supposed to be working class. The characters are, but their houses are all fucking mansions, you know. But whatever. Anyways, so I guess she was on
or like firmly middle class versus like this is where the rich suburbanites live, which I think is more what Risky Business is.
So I guess they're doing it on like. Are they? Is it like the L, or are they on a commuter rail?
Yeah, I think
they're
doing it on the L. Yeah. The L's, the L's above ground, and I think they're going into the city when that's going.
Yeah,
on
when they you know, fuck on the train. Classic childhood boner material.
Yep. every person our age who swings our way.
Remembers that one.
Oh, it's burnt into our memories. Okay, so we've got a stripper strike, so workers of the world unite, which is awesome.
Here's my deep dive, Josh. So
nice. Oh well, I was hoping that your deep dive was how many strip clubs were there in New York in 2006.
Oh, I thought about that. I thought about that, but that seemed I do.
I mean, right now there are like 80. Although the 80, if you look at Google, like their 4 pages full of results
in Manhattan,
and I think in New York City, in Manhattan, I would assume there's still like
there's still
35.
A bunch. There's still a bunch.
Yeah,
in like the big
you
ones.
Can't actually literally go to every strip club in town unless you're taking weeks to do this.
There's a door, and there's a 2-drink minimum at most of these fucking places. So, yeah, there's no way in one bachelor party that you could do this.
You'd be having a lost week.
Like in...
Not a lost weekend, a lost week.
In Tijuana, in the red light district, you could maybe do this because their cover charge is usually forcing you to buy a beer when you walk inside.
Yeah.
And maybe and too. It's like a dense, walkable neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So that is something I could believe. But in New York, like...
No way.
No, you have to travel, man. So even if you're taking Ubers around town, it's not possible. Okay, so here's the thing. So recently, I keyed into this story because there has been a story in the news about a club in Los Angeles where the dancers are unionizing.
What club?
It's Star Garden in North Hollywood.
Okay.
So it's been a big story. They've been unionizing. I have a Guardian piece that I'll link about it so you can learn more about their thing. They're wanting to unionize with the Actors Equity Association. Now, they are not the first strip club to unionize. The first strip club to unionize was in 1997 in San Francisco, a club called the Lusty Lady Strip Club, which they didn't just unionize. They turned the club into a workers' co-op, which they ran successfully, apparently, until 2013. Now, there's been... I have a podcast episode...
For Angelinos who want to know where Star Garden is, it's by Salsa and Beer on Van Owen. Van Owen and Lancashire.
Okay, nice.
Salsa and Beer is the fucking shit.
Oh, really?
That's like my... I fucking love that place.
Nice.
Maybe my favorite place to eat in L.A.
Oh, interesting.
Massive portions, great Mexican food. It's Oaxacan.
Ah, yeah. Interesting. So Lusty Lady seems to have an interesting story. There's a podcast episode on Working Class History, which is the podcast about them, which I'll also link. There's a documentary that I haven't watched called Live Nude Girls Unite about them. And I have their... It's 62 pages. It's basically a manual that they wrote... The worker owners wrote called No Justice, A Working Girl's Guide to Organizing in the Sex Industry, which seems pretty awesome. They seem pretty fucking awesome, actually. And
very into this.
And, you know, the deal that these girls at the Lusty Lady Club were getting for themselves seems like a way better deal than the foreplay. The foreplay deal did not seem like a very good deal, man. The
foreplay deal is very bad.
Because
they go from 70% to 80%, but now they get health insurance. And granted, health insurance is a major expenditure.
Sure.
But 70, you're already getting hosed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're already, like, kicking up. Yeah, you're getting... So, if it's $20, right, you're getting $6.
$6.
Yeah. And now you're getting $4 off one lap dance. So think of how many lap dances you got to do to actually
walk with a fucking serious chunk of change.
It's ridiculous. Fuck that shit. Yeah, awful. Yeah, fuck awful fuck Wally Rimaldi, man.
For real. Yeah. Now, I do like that Vicky's dancing, too, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she's pretty much the best lawyer ever, right? I mean... she per her you know, not jilted but whiny bitch of a fucking fiance ex-fiance per him, she, you know, she gets down and helps the scum of the earth. It's like, no, she's helping the fucking awesome people.
Yeah, she is. Well, the thing is, so she's not only a stripper who lawyers, but she's also a lawyer who has like multiple specialties, because she's like doing like criminal defense work for the quote unquote crack whores, but she's also like representing the dancers in this labor law dispute.
Yeah, she's a labor.
Those are
labor
two totally different things.
Like, yeah, wildly different.
But I like it. Good for her.
Yeah, I mean, I'm into it. She's doing all the things that I'm into for a lawyer. including stripping,
including grinding on like an old man's joint, which I think is hubby or future hubby walked in on, which caused him to vomit.
I mean, okay, how does he not appreciate how special she was? Like, he dumped her because he happened into the foreplay while she was dancing. Some of the guys thought it was hot.
Yeah.
Like, his friends were like, "Oh, this is hot." Yeah. No shit, buddy. You should have thought that too. Mm-hmm. You're the one who missed out.
Well, I just think maybe Vicky was the one who, you know, she like was beginning to discover what she liked when she started dancing. Maybe she needed to realize that she didn't need to like fucking get married to this Art Vandelay motherfucker pretending to be an architect. And you know, like sow some wild oats, figure out who she was for a while, which sadly got cut short by a fucking special operations commando.
So fucking insane. So jumping back just a little bit, Josie is flashing her assets as much as is possibly allowed on network television. And Elliot's very bummed out. It feels very obvious that he is bummed out that she turned her back while taking the top of her dress down to her waist and then putting her sweatshirt over her bare chest. Uh-huh. You can tell he was wishing that he was getting the other side. I did like when Finn and Elliot approached Tim on the street.
Hey, Tim, heard you got a great wiener.
The best in town.
Well, the girls at the foreplay say your dog's no big thing.
What's this about?
Oh, Wiener Man. Yeah, Wiener Man. A few things to talk about with Wiener Man. His little cookout setup is not up to code. I did look into the rules and regulations about mobile food preparation in New York City, and certainly having just like a random ass grill under a pop tent is not code. There's a lot of things that you need.
Finn says, "Hey Tim, heard you got a great wiener."
Oh man, everything Finn says in this episode is essentially gold.
Yeah, and you want more Finn in this episode. Yeah. Like, there needs to be more Finn. I mean, not that the episode's not fun, but it definitely feels like it's light on Finn and shouldn't be.
I think that just there's so much going on in this episode that everything feels like it's like a little light on everything. And
I mean, there's suddenly a commando who is repelling.
There's a moment when I think at like minute 25 when like Novak shows up and you're like, oh, great, we're going to be in court for a while talking about facial recognition software. Nope.
Nope. Not arguing that in court. All right, now, did Morales really need to do the voice analysis on Wiener Man?
It seems, actually, you know what? If there's one thing that...
The naked ear could tell, it's that he didn't make that phone call.
Well, just that if there's one thing that could have been cut out of the episode, it could have been all the Morales explaining voice recognition and facial recognition and all these other things. Like, that shit could have been cut, because...
Or at least just do the facial recognition.
Yeah.
The voice recognition is totally unnecessary.
It's horseshit, because
it leads nowhere, and it's just
hear the voice.
I mean, basically, obviously, I understand what they're like. Oh, fucking technology!
Yeah, Morales is here to explain how the internet works, so he can explain how everything else works.
Well, not just that, but it's obviously there's sort of like the Big Brother element to everything going on with, you know, voice recognition and.
I get it, but you don't need.
I get it, but
voice recognition software.
You don't need both of them. You could just. make do with the thing that's ultimately
the thing that has
like it that throws most of the case out, yeah. You know, most of the investigation out.
But it also happens to lead you to a guy who has a voice that a normal person can tell is the same, yeah, as
any motherfucker watching this episode knows he did not make that call, and we don't need to spend the 10 seconds of screen time establishing.
No, nor did Alan Winchell or whatever his fucking name was. It's obvious.
Yeah. So Cragen has to lend his name to a blurb for Rosemary's Bridesmaid, which is fun.
Yeah, love it. We get to hear Cragen give the talk. We don't get to actually see his video blurb, but still lovely. Yeah.
Elliot's driver's license picture comes up in the dry run for the software, yeah. And it's given off very strong mugshot vibes. Of course, Homeland Security wants to use the facial recognition software, which I really feel like that's what's going on with Real ID. Fuck that.
You haven't gotten a Real ID yet, so you have to fly. If you're going to fly, you have to bring your passport.
Yeah. Who cares? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're probably smart doing that.
Probably doesn't do anything, but I'm sure that the passport photo is somehow different. Anyway, then boom, it's Tessa's husband.
Yeah. He's not even inside yet, and looks like he's about to make a DNA deposit. Fences. great shit.
I mean, he would have. Yeah. And then, of course, we got the bullshit angle of the computer doing the police's job for them. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. But they cited CNN, a story on CNN. Like, that's not fucking precedent. No. Like, you can't just cite a story on CNN and act like that's like citing the New York Times and acting like that's a reputable news source.
Well, but still, like,
you know, like how many times has the New York Times been disproven and shown to be fucking like Judith Miller and all of that shit? Like, you can't just cite a news story and say, oh, that's a fact.
No, and it's not like legal precedent either. And on planet Earth, in the real world, they use fucking facial recognition software all the time to do all kinds of fucking shit. Yeah, some of it's shady, Peter and Teal. Some of it, you know, often it's shady.
Almost always it's shady. Yeah. So then they go to re-interview Josie, who's dead, and her apartment has no fire escape, and the door was chained. And there are 8 stories up.
we get another, even kind of more outlandish dead body shot of Josie,
where
it's full upskirt. We see the panties.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's full upskirt from like 25, 30 feet away. Yeah. But like...
Well, one's further back. There's like 2 shots of it. So they see in and then they look in closer.
The other shot is sort of like from the other side of her. So you're not looking... It's not an upskirt angle. It's basically a down blouse angle. Okay. I mean, she's still fully being sexualized. I'm not saying she's not. She's being sexualized from every angle possible as a corpse. Because we're watching SVU.
Yeah, we sure are. In this case, I mean, we don't know whether she had sex or not. Not that that matters, but the I guess she's been staged to look like she's been like. It's.
I mean, she's certainly been filled with a load, regardless of whether or not it was delivered from a meat injection or a turkey baster.
Oh. Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome.
This is the. This is the crime that gives me more questions, right? So I understand maybe...
We're going to run ads on this.
Why? Yeah. Why Josie gets killed, right? But I don't necessarily... But my understanding is that Inman thinks that Linus is having an affair with Josie as well as with Vicky.
No, no, it's not that Inman does. It's that... his wife does.
Yeah, but Inman's been like snooping about, and he's seen him go to both apartments, and so he's reported back to Tessa that he's gone to this apartment. So,
well, but she can deduct that from the phone bill.
Sure, but still,
I'm sure she pointed him in this direction.
But still, neither Inman nor Tessa have evidence that Josie wasn't banging Linus. So they have some evidence that he might have been, but they don't have evidence that he wasn't. So what I don't understand is why they felt the need to, you know, extract the sample and then place it, which again, you know, so many questions. What is the shelf life of like a mouth
of spat out spat out chism load? What's well, he is. You know, the son of Kwai Chang Kang. You know, he's the son of a Shaolin monk. So I would assume that his load half life is a lot longer.
Oh. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Is that the name of the episode?
It's going to be something having to do with this. Wow. At least she got a couple lines of dialogue, so she definitely did get a bump. I don't know if she was more than under five or not. But
I think she was still under five, but she would have gotten a bump for the topless show.
Yeah, but before we meet Inman, we do get to see Silverhammer's website, which is utter dog shit. One of the worst websites I've ever seen.
But you saw what they offered, right? The last thing that they offered.
No, I
kidnap for ransom is on the list of services that they offer. Kidnap for ransom. They offer that on the website. Like everything else is totally normal. And then the last one is kidnap for fucking ransom.
I feel like that's one of those off menu items that people need to ask about, like not online, not with a paper trail. Oh, fantastic.
So, okay. Just back for a second. Liv believes Linus, despite his fucking spunk being in both victims.
Well,
like she doesn't believe the DNA.
Well, if we think about who the victim is in this, and so obviously Josie and Vicky are the primary victims, but Linus is definitely like the secondary victim.
I mean, I know that he is, but like with evidence only pointing towards him, she doesn't believe the evidence, which kind of seems insane.
But Liv, she doesn't shoot from her brain. She shoots from her heart, and her heart hears victims, man. She's the victim's, you know, like the victim whisperer. And she knows a victim when she sees one. And she's like, wow, that guy has been fucked over.
He's the son of a Shaolin monk.
You'd think he had more self-control. Yeah.
He was a cop.
Yeah.
Anyway. We're like the only people who've seen only people talking about Kung Fu Legend Continues. No one else has fucking seen that who's listening to this.
I disagree, man. If you guys go back
my
in
brother
time
might
to
have,
like...
Yeah, my brother and sister definitely saw it also.
That was like on one of the like UPN kind of channels, right?
No, it was syndicated.
It was, okay.
It was
nice.
Syndicated.
Yeah, man, that was on a lot.
That was back when like you had syndicated shows like that, you know, Renegade and
Hogan's Heroes.
The Star Treks were all syndicated.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, there's also the fun like don't get him started on Dick Cheney again. Mm-hmm. that line's really fun.
Yeah.
All of Jeffrey Subcheck's men are rock stars apparently. Well, except for the guy with the record.
I mean, he's pretty badass. I mean, the only thing that gave him away was forgetting to unchain the door.
Yeah. Now Elliot asks him, where did you get Linus's semen? Did you two have a little don't ask, don't tell thing going on? Which is fun. Uh-huh. Then, you know, Warner swoops in and she's like, oh, there's also DNA from Tessa's saliva mixed in with Linus's ejac, meaning she isn't a swallower.
No.
And saved his cum to frame him.
No, Warner comes in saying one of the best lines I think the show has ever had, which she says,
I miss the days when revenge just meant shooting someone.
And I miss the days when I never had to say I ran more DNA tests on that semen.
Oh, fantastic. Novak threatens him with Son of Sam laws. Those only prohibit criminals from profiting from their crimes with TV or film, TV, film, or writing. It doesn't have anything to do with like getting paid for
like hitman for hire.
Yeah.
Kind of
not
traditional crimes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not applicable to this case at all.
Yeah. So how does that work with the Wolf of Wall Street guy who's clearly profiting off his crimes? Anyways, we don't need to get into that.
It's white collar, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, it's true. Yeah. It's not real crime.
Fucking rich people. Okay, so these two innocent women died so Phoebe Inman could get her Columbia paid for.
Yeah.
But then we find out that she also, Tessa, had Walter steal viruses and bacteria from a lab.
Yeah.
And we get the weird Munchausen's wrench thrown in the gears. Yeah.
We get to see Rebecca De Mornay really kind of go big at the end.
Yeah, we get to see De Mornay De Mornay.
Yeah.
But it's also like the part of the episode where it's like, okay, well, now that Munchausen's introduced, it kind of like my notes just fall off a cliff.
Yeah,
there's not much left to talk about.
There's not much stuff to talk about. She does the seizure thing, you know.
Which her seizure acting is fucking hilarious.
I love it.
I laughed so fucking hard when she's like seizing out of the wheelchair. Yeah. Like, ugh.
I mean, at this point, you know, she's 100% full of shit, and it's just like,
absolutely,
is Novak gonna fuck it up or not? Basically, at this point,
right.
She kind of fucks it up, but then,
but it's not really her fault. I mean, she like Petrovsky just got played.
Yeah.
You know,
of course.
And then we find out that Linus hasn't talked to her doctor in years.
Yeah.
This is fucking Rebecca De Mornay, bro.
Yeah.
Like, she cannot be trusted.
No, absolutely not. If she's not letting you go to the doctor's office, aren't you assuming the worst?
Giant red flag.
I mean, there's like one of two things going on. Either A, she's been
fucking her doctor,
lying to you about literally everything, or more likely she's fucking the doctor. But yeah, it turns out to be A.
She's breastfeeding every child. She's breastfeeding every child in the waiting room.
That might be the title.
Okay, so he shoves a wheelchair into the cocoon pool. That is the pool from Cocoon.
It is? For real?
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. It looked familiar.
It's absolutely the pool from Cocoon.
Wow. I mean,
they did, like, that's what it says on IMDb, and it looks like
fucking
it.
Fucking gorgeous house. Fucking yeah, outrageous.
Well, it's not even really a house. It's something else. It's here. I can
okay. The
it.
Location is fucking gorgeous that they inherited from her dear old dad, who had a rather large bust of himself produced.
It's at the Pleasantdale Chateau in West Orange.
Okay.
And then, you know, she gets out of the pool because, oh, wow, her legs work.
Yeah.
Shocking. Yeah. And like, the instant I saw her in a wheelchair, I was like, she can walk. The first moment.
Yeah.
First moment. Okay. Obviously. Oh, De Mornay? She can walk.
She can walk, and she fucking did it. But
yeah,
this might be the only time we've seen a non-teen in a rather skimpy swimsuit get out of a swimming pool in SVU.
Yeah, instead we see wet, sad De Mornay
wearing
who looks
jeans.
Like Gollum.
Yeah.
She looks like Gollum getting out.
Yeah,
like when she's like, who's going to take care of me? And Liv says the warden. Oh. She really straight up looks like Gollum.
Oh, her eyes are like bulging.
Yep. And her eyes are kind of twitching too,
oh,
like
great.
Around the side. And yeah, it's like, oh,
she De Mornay's out.
I wonder if Andy Serkis did mocap for that.
Oh, we did this, didn't we? So, of course, guys, we rank every one of these episodes. We are eventually going to watch 500 something episodes of this show. I don't even know how many episodes there are at this point, or in the at least in the pipe, if not in the can. But
there are 516 right now, I
Jesus
believe.
Christ.
Maybe 515 and 516 is the first episode of the season.
We have a long ways to go, Josh, but we're...
Yep, and they just keep doing more.
But, so we're trying to come up with a composite score, which will allow us to rank all of them against each other. We go from... Basically, the ranking is from The Undiscovered Country to Possessed. Undiscovered Country got a 1 overall, and Possessed got a 10 overall. Now, to get those scores, we have a 1 through 10 scale on 4 different criteria. We judge on the overall quality of the episode, the quality of the guests, how problematic the episode was, and the depth and breadth of lives ruined. Now, I have a hard time believing that this episode won't score pretty dang high.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty high.
Because it basically ticks every box,
yeah.
And it's...
In varying degrees, but it's like above average on everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite, like, it's not Possessed, right?
Like quality, it's probably, if we start at quality, I think it's probably a 7 or an 8, right?
We don't have, I'm looking back at Possessed and just remembering Devin Rattray.
There's not that.
We don't have that. We don't have Taron Manning's
any number of things about the Devin Rattray like performance.
Yeah, exactly.
Not in this one.
We don't have that. We don't have Taron Manning's equally wild performance. But De Mornay,
you know, perverts.
You know the perverts. But De Mornay goes pretty goddamn hard. We've got Tim the Wiener Man. We've got Peter Kane. Like, there's a lot to like here. We've got an entire. Mm-hmm. Like, there's an entire, like, 10 minutes where we're hyper-focused on how sperm got inside a dead woman. It's fantastic shit, man. It's
into multiple dead women.
Yeah, exactly. Fantastic fucking shit, man. Quality, I don't know that it's a 10.
No. I think max it's an 8. It might be a 7.
I'm inclined to give it an 8 just because it's so much fun. Like, what it lacks maybe in kind of like structure because it just is like it's like
I mean this is the classic throw 15 different plots. Oh my god,
it's machine gun fire. I mean, again, Tim the Wiener Man, like, recognizable actor and fun plot gone in 15 seconds.
I mean, max what, a minute and a half of screen time that's committed to Tim the
Wiener
Man. Even
Holt McElhaney, who's like a pretty big actor. He doesn't have very much screen time.
He wasn't like lead actor in things until after this, but
I get that. But yeah, I mean, maybe I'm biased by things that happen later, but still he's in a lot of stuff even before then.
But it was usually as like, you know, oh, there's military guy or there's you know, mob enforcer or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Anyways, he's cut like in one ear and out the other. It's like, oh, he's a fucking JSOC super soldier. And then it's like, oh, no, he's gone. But still, I'm inclined to give it an 8 because I think it's just so much fucking fun. Because it goes fun.
I'm not going
to
push back.
It goes pretty hard. Guess De Mornay is kind of everything you want from De Mornay.
Yeah. I mean, the only issue is that I think they sort of underutilize her because she doesn't really get to do much until about minute 32.
That's the whole red herring.
She's really, I know, but she's really only in the last third, and you'd hope with.
But when she's there, she goes pretty hard. I mean, eyes bulging, seizing.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not good, but I mean, I think we're debating whether or not this is, you know, like on the like. In the 7 to 10 range, if it's closer to 7 than 10, and I think it's closer to 7.
I mean, I think it might be another 8.
I think it's like an, I think it's an 8.
Yeah, I think it might be another 8. Because it's, we think about Possessed, right? Uh-huh. Like the three principals, David Hyde Pierce, Taron Manning, and Devin Rattray. Each one
not
of
David
them.
Hyde Pierce, not David Hyde
no,
Pierce.
No, not David Hyde Pierce.
So if, David Patrick Kelly.
Patrick Kelly, thank you. I should put the toss salad and scrambled eggs theme in there.
Well, I don't know that we can do that anymore.
I don't know. Well, still, each one of them is over the top and outstanding, and they get time to shine. There's not much time for anybody in this one.
And I mean, there's a, like, I think, you know, what, Matthew Marr is fun.
I think
Chris Potter's, you know, relatable in the role that he's given.
He's the straight man.
He's a straight man. He's Jason Bateman having to like have all of the craziness happen around.
Yeah, he's Neo. You know, he knows kung fu now. Basically, you know, he's the the lens through which we see the drama unfold in a way.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's probably an 8.
Okay, I like that. Now, problematic.
What's problematic about this? we have one Vic who is not given a line and is therefore only a featured extra. Yeah. And she's
like
damn near naked under those blankets.
She's very close to naked.
We're meant to think that she was strangled.
And she was strangled.
Maybe on the headboard.
She was strangled and hit her headboard.
Well, you know, we're meant to believe that she was strangled, hit her head on the headboard, and was filled with a load. spat out ejaculate of her actual lover. Uh-huh. Or wait, was the spat out ejaculate only from Josie?
No, the Josie cum was planted. The Vicky jizz was natural. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there's like at one point we're like wondering like, was she raped? Was it just fucking gone wrong? Like, there's a lot of different options for what it could have been.
He forgot her safe word.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thought it was pineapple. It was watermelon.
I mean, we're also treated to a lovely kind of like red herring of a cold open that it would have been fun if it was fleshed out, right? Like, those guys like remind me of the film crew from Better Call Saul. I wanted to know these guys. I wanted to know, like, yeah. I wanted them to be a part of the action. We never really get to know them. Though their crime does mirror, you know, the crimes against Vicky and Josie. So that's kind of a fun little twist. Now, again, just
a meta twist.
Yeah. This episode presupposes that there are, you know,
because they're seeing what we're seeing.
There are Delta Force commandos rappelling down the side of your building, coming in your window, strangling you
to kill side pieces
and forcing sperm into your orifices. And that's a wild scheme.
Okay. So the thing that doesn't track, I think that they would both have to have had the cum forced up there to implicate him, right?
To implicate
the husband, Linus.
But because
they did it the second time also, I think they need to ensure that it was okay. There, so I think it's probably forced both times.
I mean, that it sort of makes sense, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know. I suppose you're right.
I love that we're having. I think that if that's the method for one, it's got to be the method for both.
Yeah, but I mean, you caught the dude wet dicked, so to speak. So like, why not? I don't know why he needs. Why do they need to hang two bodies on him? Why not just one? The second one is just pure jealousy, right? The first one was
The first one's also pure jealousy.
Yeah, but the first one was to get her husband sent up where he can never cheat on her again, and the second one is just because she wants to get rid of the competition for her man.
I think both are still the same thing.
But I mean, but like if he gets convicted of this crime.
I think both were in the works regardless. I think both were going to happen regardless of.
But yeah, you don't really need to kill both of them, right? Because if you only need to implicate him in one of them.
You do if you're a psychopath like sure. Rebecca DeBruyne.
Yeah, and a, you know.
Sorry. Tessa. Man, Tom Cruise dodged a bullet.
I mean, good on Walter Inman for having his daughter get high enough test scores to get into an Ivy League institution without being a legacy, though. It's, you know, good work. Yeah. So, okay, give us a number, Josh. I think it's pretty high.
Yeah, it's high. It's again, like...
Is it Ninja Pedos pawing, like,
no,
cooing?
No, it's not Ninja Pedos. I think this is probably an 8, right?
It might go.
Is this just going to be?
It might end up being 8s across the board.
Well, I think the next one might score a little lower. Actually,
you think? Okay, we have two dead bodies.
The striking strippers who all got hosed on their deal.
We have the striking strippers who got hosed on their deal because she was really just using the negotiations to get herself a fucking job dancing. Is what it sounded like to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Wally Rimaldi seemed like more happy about it than anything.
Is this what a 6? A 7?
I think this is a 6. So, like, sure, Linus, his life is kind of in ruins, but he's a grown-ass man, right? So it's a little bit different when, I guess, an adult has been manipulated this way than a child might be.
Right, right.
And also, there's two bodies, sure. There's one extra who's been exploited in the way that SVU loves to exploit extras. But I think it's more about, it's more about the... You know, jizz implantation. That's where the episode kind of lies. Now, we give this...
That's where the episode shines.
So, we gave it an overall score of 7.5, which, I mean, it's definitely... Like, I don't know if that reflects how fun it is, because it isn't perfect on any category. It hits all the categories, but it's not really perfect on any of them. But to me, this is definitely the kind of episode where, like, if somebody wants to know why I spend so much of my time doing this goddamn like podcast, this is the kind of episode. It's like,
sure,
this look at this fucking episode. Anyways, so is it time to roll the next one? We can say goodbye to Rebecca DeMornay's SVU career.
Viacom Diaz.
Sadly.
So heading over to episode.lol, which was built for this podcast by friend of the pod, Flat. The tape is spinning.
Mm-hmm.
Bill and Ted, not happy.
They never are.
And we've landed in season 4 on episode 23, Grief. When a rape victim winds up dead, her father decides to take justice into his own hands.
Huh.
This one features Joe Morton.
Huh. Joe Morton.
Scandal fans would know him as the titular, the lead's father. This features Viola Davis also. Michelle Hicks, who was, Mara from, is it Mara from The Shield? Goggins's, Shane's old lady.
This will be the 6th season 4 episode that we've done. So we've done a few of the season 4s. We haven't done one in a long time, though. It's,
There are some seasons where it's just like, I mean, we still haven't hit a season, 20?
We haven't done any past 21.
We've hit 120. Yeah, so 22 and 23, nothing. And we've been like, why the fuck aren't we hitting it? We've checked the randomizer.
It works.
It does hit them.
We've hit one single season 20, and we've hit two season 2s. So, like.
We've only hit 2 season 2s?
Only 2. Only Haunted.
And one of them is awful.
Yeah, it was Asunder, the other one.
Asunder.
Yeah.
Wait, did you say Haunted?
It wasn't Haunted.
Haunted season 6.
No, it wasn't Haunted. It was the Juvenile.
Okay.
It was Juvenile, that right? Because
that doesn't seem right.
Consent. This might be Consent, the rapiest bar in New York City.
Yeah, Juvenile season 4.
Yeah, that's right. Still had Wet Finn in season 4, I guess. But season 2, you're like, his hair is very moist.
Oh, yeah.
But Josh, it's very late for me, so I think I want to tell people that we have a Patreon.
Yep.
At this point, we have not changed the tier system at all, and so but the things
that may be in the offing,
it might change. We'll make announcements about
we won't change anything. Like, if you're paying $5, you'll still get everything you were getting.
Exactly. You're getting video, you're getting unedited episodes, you're getting them a week before the edited episodes drop. You're also getting our monthly movie club episodes, which we've done some really great and some less great films at this point.
Wolfen and Desert Hearts, I would recommend them to almost anybody.
Wolfen,
they're both really fun.
Desert Hearts is
Desert Hearts. I don't know that Desert Hearts is fun
exactly,
but it's really
fun.
But
it is fun. It is fun. It's a different kind of
fun. It's just not the fun that you would expect from us if you listen to this podcast.
Exactly. Wolfen is
what we name our episodes.
Yeah. Wolfen is the kind of fun you'd expect from us.
Absolutely. And Alphabet City, I think, is that also.
Alphabet City is great. She's Too Young is that, but it's
She's Too Young is very much in the vein of this podcast.
Not quite the production levels of Wolfen or Desert Hearts, but
you don't need it.
Yeah.
You almost don't want it, honestly. If you had the production value, you'd be disappointed.
Boy Who Loved Trolls, not so much.
No. That was a rash decision that I wish I could take back.
So far, our fantasy picks are not really panning out the way that the other ones are. Because Ghoulies is fun and kind of almost, I think, necessary viewing for Marishka fans.
Absolutely, yeah. And the next movie club will be Mean Guns.
Yeah.
The Ice-T Lambert joint, which seems like it's going to be a ton of fun.
Yeah.
We haven't watched it.
No.
So.
That's
the next one. Like, this episode will have dropped after that.
Right.
But the one we haven't recorded.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Mean Guns.
So, and we have not watched it. But.
Nope.
Yeah. But yeah, so that stuff's still there. We're also on socials. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter as @MunchByBenson. We're on Reddit r/MunchByBenson. We have a website, www.munchmybenson.com. We also have an email address.
You got the W's right, though.
I know, right? MunchMyBenson@gmail.com. Yeah. None of that stuff is going to change, even if other stuff changes. We haven't. We're saying this because we had a meeting with people and we're going to change slight things. I think most of it will occur behind the scenes, so it won't really affect
I don't think it should affect anybody.
Now, we will lose the music, but we kind of knew that going in, that was going to have to die
someday.
Yeah,
and I mean, if you've listened to 125, I didn't put music in.
Exactly. So. And I listened to 125, and I'm sure Josh could have put in some fun tracks, but it doesn't really detract too much.
I would have put them in just to remove them in a month.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, guys, I think that means it's time to get out there and start munching. But please don't hire, you know, professional assassins to repel
or Spider-Man.
From the side.
Don't
from
hire
a building.
Professional assassins or Spider-Man
to implant jizz in your munch partners.
To fill women's dead crevasses with your partner's ejac.
That you extracted with your mouth and then spat into, I don't know, what, like what's the timing there? Like, how much time do you have to leave it in your throat before you deposit it?
I mean
are we saying that she is
does this episode mean that any anyone who is with their lover and has finished in their mouth, does this mean that they all have to sit there and either watch them spit
watch them swallow, feel their neck until they swallow.
Watch them either spit or swallow, but they have to see it happen, and it has to go into a place where, like, how many paranoid people are going to be out there, like, keeping track of their discharged loads after?
I think, as is often the theme during Neil Bearer years, don't trust anybody, especially if you love them.
It's this and the X-Files. Yeah. Trust no one.
Yeah. Anyways, on that note, we'll see you guys.
Here. It's bad enough that we have some nut out there trying to strap him to a rickshaw.
Right, I'll just take 50. Do we have a deal?
Yeah. And here it is. You get your toilet book out of here, and I won't jump over this counter and punch you in the brain.
I can take it in merchandise.
Here I come.